So now we have a car company doing an ad where they stick five cars on the screen and they hope you don't look at the cars. Because all they want you to do is look at the dogs and have all the good feelings inside that you normally associate with dogs.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and this is Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Today, we welcome author Mark Cushing to discuss his book, Pet Nation, The Love Affair That Changed America. If you're new to this podcast, in each episode, we explore the world of dog care and companionship. We save each other is the motto of Rosie Fund, which simply means the more we do for dogs, the more they do for us, and they already do a lot. If you love dogs, you'll love Dog Words. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions. Go to the podcast page at rosiefund.org to share your thoughts. We welcome suggestions for topics and guests. Please download, subscribe, rate, and most importantly, share Dog Words. Please follow Rosie Fund on social media, especially the free Rosie Fund YouTube channel that offers great videos of Rosie, Peaches, and shelter dogs. October is Adopt a Shelter Dog Month. At Rosie Fund, we encourage you to make a difference in a shelter dog's life. You can do just that by purchasing one of our We Save Each Other t-shirts at bonfire.com. Use the link in this episode's description. All proceeds go towards supporting Rosie Fund's mission to help senior and harder-to-adopt dogs have a better life. On Dog Words, we recently interviewed Tom Soames, the president and co-founder of Pet Tech, the first international training center dedicated to helping pet parents and pet care professionals learn how to better care for their pets in emergency and in health. That inspired us to have a pet CPR training fundraiser to support Rosie Fund. There are multiple sessions with limited availability on Saturday, October 17th at Bar K Dog Bar in Kansas City. Go to rosiefund.org/events. A link is in the description for more information or to register. The cost is $50 with proceeds benefiting Rosie Fund. Thank you to everyone at Bar K who helped us put this together, and a big thank you to pet tech trainer Kyle Thibodeau. The mission of Rosie Fund is to provide humans with the resources and education they need to give senior and harder to adopt dogs a better life. We thank you for joining our mission. Today on Dog Words, our guest is author Mark Cushing. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you. Good to be here, and what an amazing place, Bar K, here in Kansas City, I'm telling
yes,
you.
Yes, we've done a few interviews in Bar K. It's a great location for the energy we want to talk about dogs. This is very appropriate. So any background noise you hear, audience, you're used to it if you're a regular listener. We have Mark on today to talk about the launch of his book, Pet Nation, The Love Affair That Changed America. We may take for granted that, especially listeners to this program, that, well, I'm a dog lover. I've always been a dog lover. What's changed about America just because we love pets? Haven't we always loved pets? But your book highlights maybe how that relationship has evolved. Right. I want you to tell us all about that. But before we do that, Mark, I want you to tell us more about you. Have you always been a dog lover, a dog person?
I've had dogs and cats, and right now I have two cats from the same litter, barn cats, as you call them. They came from East Tennessee when I lived near Knoxville for a couple of years. And then I have a 9-month-old Papillon puppy, Louis, who was named after Louis Vuitton, but I think he thinks he's named after King Louis. And
they sometimes have that disposition.
He is a crazy fun dog. I mean, just super smart. Fast like Roadrunner cartoon fast, or he just appears out of nowhere. So I've had both cats and dogs, but I grew up in an era, you're not allowed to ask anybody their age, but I grew up in an era where dogs and cats, except for the rare family, so you would never make the statement there hasn't been a person that always loved dogs or cats, because mm-hmm. particularly dogs, but for the most part, dogs were accessories. They showed up, in this case, my first dog was a collie named Prince. I write about Prince in the book. I was a 3-year-old, and that was when milk was delivered to your house, and the milkman claimed that Prince bit him. I'm sure it didn't happen because Prince wasn't an aggressive dog, so the milkman must have done something to provoke him. And my dad, wherever he is today, he's passed away. He's, I'm sure, not happy that I retell this story, but sorry, Dad, you deserve it. Anyway, the milkman broke a bottle over Prince's head, presumably in self-defense. I don't believe it. So Prince took a pretty serious blow, but he wasn't dead and he wasn't going to die. And Dad told myself and my siblings, hey, I found a farm outside of town, grew up outside Portland, Oregon.
I see where this is going.
Perfect place for Prince. Oh, that's great, Dad. We miss him. I was heartbroken because I was the littlest. And 20 years later, last time my other brother was born, there were siblings. We're having a drink at our house. The last time we were together except for a funeral. And my mom said to my dad, and my last name's Cushing, and we're often called Cush as a shorthand, so she always called my dad Cush. His first name was Willard. He was from Ord, Nebraska, a little town in Nebraska, and he didn't like the name Willard, so she called
him
Cush.
Dean Steinkuhler is also from Ord, Nebraska. I just thought I'd throw that in.
Who was?
Dean Steinkuhler, All-American. I believe he was from Ord.
So is Lisa. Her dad's from Ord, we discovered.
Could someone... So, Google me right. Someone fact check that. I'm pretty sure Dean Steinkuhler is one of the smallest towns to ever produce NCAA Division I football All-American.
He's a stud. And the nickname of their high school is a fantastic nickname, the Chanticleers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, a little teeny name, or three letters, one syllable, has like a nine-syllable nickname.
I am fact checking myself. I confused Ord, Nebraska with Burr, Nebraska. Dean Steinkuhler is thought to be from the smallest town to ever produce an All-American. Burr only has a population of 66 people.
But back to my dad. My mom says to my dad, she goes, you know, Cush, I wonder how life turned out for Prince, they call him. You know, after you took him to the farm and all, when that milkman did that terrible thing. And forgetting the backdrop, with his kids in the room, all grown now, and he's having a martini and we're having a drink, he says, honey, what are you talking about? She goes, remember Prince, Sicali? She goes, no, I remember Prince. Honey, I took him to Sandy, the name of the veterinarian in my hometown, only one vet. She goes, I took him to Sandy, he put him down that day. And we just all looked at my dad like, he was the nicest guy in the world too.
Mm-hmm.
But we were like, wait a minute, wait. That gorgeous, beautiful collie. Of course, all of us every Sunday night watch Lassie. So it was as cool as it could get to have your own collie. And my parents didn't let us get a dog again. And it was like a lot of families. When I wrote the book, I talked to a lot of people that had that experience. We don't have the money, or it's too much work, or you don't even mm-hmm. keep your room clean, so how are you going to take care of a dog? So we never had another dog. I had a cat named Bosco that was all black with one white toe. I'll never forget that. But that was a typical cat. We lived near railroad tracks, and we'd get cats come in and out, and we'd feed them.
Yes.
He'd have them for a month, and then one day he just was gone. I had him for about a year. So I didn't have pets. My friends did. But the ones that were most involved with pets, Phil, were the ones that loved to hunt. And they had dogs that they treated like royalty because they went bird hunting. They went duck hunting. They went pheasant hunting. And they would never go hunting without that dog. And the dog was treated like a king. And it was an interesting relationship that people had. But most folks, you know, dogs, yes, there were people that loved dogs. Very few people had that were crazy about cats. And so what's changed, long way of answering your question, what's changed is that I say that they kind of went from accessories, but it was the baby boomer generation, of which I'm part of.
Mm-hmm.
And they began to grow up with pets. They got interested in pets and began to have pets. And for a long time, they were the biggest owners of dogs and cats in America. But they've been replaced by their children, millennials, who own more. And they've taken it to a whole new level, by far.
The relationship you described of pets being an accessory, but still being loved, I can identify with that. I grew up, listeners know, on a farm outside of Tilden, Nebraska.
Where's Tilden?
25 miles west of Norfolk, up Highway 275 on the Elkhorn River.
How far is it from Kearney?
Kearney, we would be about 2.5 hours, okay. 3.5. So we'd be north and a little east of Kearney.
My dad's uncle was president of what was then Kearney State Teachers College, which is where he met my mom.
Now part of the University of Nebraska UNK.
And their nickname's the Lopes, or mm-hmm. Antelopes.
They call them the Lopers.
Or the Lopers, yeah.
But anyway. Yeah, growing up on a farm, we had a dog. Yeah. We had multiple dogs.
Yeah.
I loved every one of them, but they didn't come in the house unless there was ice stuck to their fur that we had to pick out, and then you would send them back out, and they would sleep with the other livestock in the barn where it's perfectly warm. And we loved them, but we didn't plan our trips around them like right. I do now, where yeah. I make sure that we have pet-friendly places to eat and stay for the trip, and that there's things to do with our dog at that destination that wouldn't even have been a remote consideration when I was a kid.
You would just pour enough dog food into a container for 3 days.
Or you'd tell your uncle, check on my dog every couple days.
Yeah, just make sure he's got some water. Yeah. I agree.
You didn't even need to do that because there are water for the livestock that they can drink out of. And
well, two things changed dramatically. And if you try to say what was the actual cultural change.
Mm-hmm. What was the inflection point?
There were two. One was the bringing of the pets indoors. And initially it didn't start out with your bed, but now 75% of all cats and dogs sleep on top of the bed. They may, you know, they may have a bed in the room. It might be a $200 fleece, gorgeous bed that you wouldn't mind sleeping on, but they sleep on top of the bed. So bringing them in the house allowed people to be much more engaged with their animal. And I think what happened was people just discovered how much fun cats and dogs were, number one.
Mm-hmm.
The second change was all driven by dogs. And the phrase I use often is that dogs came in the house and then they went right out the front door to every place in America. And that's what you just said, where you go on a trip and the hotel now, they all take pets. And the ones that don't are being told, you're going to go out of business, so you better take pets. And you can take them into stores, you can take them outside restaurants. That's even before places like Barquet were thought of. Suddenly, you could take them everywhere, and people discovered how much fun that was. And then they just, more and more neighbors, more and more people got pets and began to treat them. And they thought, well, as long as my dog is inside and it's Halloween, why don't I get Frosty a Halloween outfit? And then what changed was when it was next year in Halloween, instead of saying, you know, let's go into the closet and get the Spider-Man outfit. No, you go to a store and you buy a new Halloween outfit. And so you began to just have people buy things because it was fun. And what do dogs say to everything a human wants to do? Great, let's do it.
Yeah, like if we're right doing now. It together, I'm in.
But you got it.
We would need to check with Labe and Dave to see what the actual numbers are, but I would bet Halloween is one of their biggest nights of the year.
Oh.
Barquet is amazing at Halloween.
It has to be. Oh, crazy. But I guarantee you, Christmas has got to do well because everybody's going to have a Christmas outfit.
Mm-hmm.
So you had this combination of bringing them inside, having the engagement be much more around the clock, at least you know every day, if not every hour of every day. And then you began to have the no pets allowed signs, in effect, taken down. And then...
Do you know why our SUV has heated seats in the back?
Of course. Well, and you
when we went car shopping, what our criteria was?
Well, cars had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. We don't have children. There's no one else who sits in our back seat.
So here's what happened. If I describe what happened, I just told you. Those two things were primary. How that happened had a lot to do with cars. It had to do with two advertising agencies that at the start of Pet Nation, which is about 20, 25 years ago, Subaru came up with this idea that if you had told me then what they were doing, you would have said, that's ridiculous. Which is this. We're going to do an ad of a Subaru, and we're not going to tell the viewer for 30 seconds anything about the car. We're not going to say one thing about the engine, miles per gallon, anything. We're just going to have a dog in the front seat. And ideally, the window's down, and the dog's got some hair, and the hair is flying in the wind. Okay, what's your point?
Does this have a drivetrain warranty?
Here's our, and the point would be, you didn't hear me. We just want people to see a dog and associate that dog with Subaru. And we're confident they're going to come into a dealership and actually buy a $15,000 to $50,000 car. All because we stuck a dog in a front seat and made it fun. And no kidding, it worked. And I've seen the sales charts of Subaru tied to when the dog campaigns came out. They're off the charts. I mean, and somebody, I hope that person was given a bonus, the likes of which has never been exceeded because it's so brilliant.
Yeah, they earned it.
And even now, almost doesn't make sense to me. And then I saw last year, I was watching a pro football game in December, pre-COVID, you know, which seems like a decade ago. And Hyundai did their ad, and they had five Hyundais. They were all silver, and they went from tallest to smallest, and they were lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And in front of them,
I can picture this.
You remember that ad?
Yes.
They had five dogs, tallest to smallest.
Yeah, they had the greyhound down
got,
to like
yeah,
a
exactly
happy owner or something. And
You know the executives.
Not a Greyhound, a Great Dane. I'm sorry. Before people email me corrections.
No, it was Great Dane. I remember that. And again, what's brilliant to me is that the executives wanted you to only look at the dogs during the commercial. So now we have a car company doing an ad where they stick five cars on the screen and they hope you don't look at the cars. Because all they want you to do is look at the dogs and have all the good feelings inside that you normally associate with dogs happen. And you think, I love Hyundai. Yeah. You know, honey, I've never thought about it, but let's think about getting a Hyundai. Yeah.
They kept you from visiting the men's room or grabbing another slice of pizza because, it's a car commercial or a beer commercial. Yeah. It's like, there's dogs.
100%.
They give it poetic meaning. The book Design Driven Innovation talks about products that have no functional advantage over their competition, but they have poetic meaning. And people go into a store and buy something that's sort of preloaded with a story, that it looks like this could have been handed down from your grandmother, or you got it in a trip to Europe or something, or a historic place in Europe. But no, it's just designed to be that way. With dogs, it's already in our DNA that we have that emotional, poetic connection with them, so why not attach it to products?
And then along came the science, which has been repeated and studied, and there's no question, it's not challenged anymore. It was originally challenged. It's just folk wisdom, like a grandmother's flu remedy or something. But no, science proved that your oxytocin levels go up, which is what happens in your brain when you're happy and you're not stressful, and your cortisol levels go down, which is the opposite. The good thing is we've now seen that it happens to pets too. So it's not just pets making us happy and they're working all day.
Yeah, it's reciprocal.
No, it's reciprocal. So it's
don't feel guilty about the health benefits of your pet. You're not draining them. Right. And it makes sense that the health benefits of a dog being something that gets you to exercise more and kind of changes your lifestyle. But just the fact that it's in your life. Everything else that happens is just a bonus. Just the fact that it's in your life is going to make you healthier.
Yeah, very much. And you've had the argument sometimes, have we turned dogs and cats into the new children? And my answer is no, they're not children. And that's a mistake to think of it that way. In fact, it's a disrespect to the pets because they're treated better than most kids are. I mean, you know, that's a joke, but it's almost not a joke. But it's just a new species. And it's always been around, but not treated that way. They were laborers. Cats, in particular. Your show is only about dogs, right?
We can drift into cats. I don't think people will turn us off.
All right. Well, we'll just hear this.
We've earned a little.
This is Kansas City, time. And it's a great sports town. And so I'll use a sports metaphor because I've always called cats the comeback kids. But I think it's the greatest comeback story in history. What do I mean? They came to the U.S. on ships from Europe with a single job. It was a job. Catch, kill, and eat every mouse and every rat on this ship. That way we can have food that we, the people on the ship, can count on. Mm-hmm. And it's not contaminated, but it's also not eaten. They did a great job. They landed and they built cities. You know, the East Coast cities, the Midwest cities like Kansas City, but particularly Chicago, Detroit, New York, Boston, and so forth. And they kept that job. They were the sanitary system for most of those cities for about 50 years, almost 100 years. And there were lots of rats and mice running around, and the cats caught them, killed them, ate them. And then public health showed up. Sanitation workers, garbage workers, chemicals that treated and killed mice and so forth. And cats got fired. They literally got fired from that job. And to add insult to injury, we euthanized cats by the millions. They became the new rodents. In other words, cats were feral. They were running around cities. And it was like, good God, we can't have this. They didn't have any function anymore. And they were killed. Today, there are 85 to 90 million pet cats in America. Basically the same number as dogs. Now, how'd that even happen? I mean, seriously, you go from being a sanitary worker to fired, useless rodent, killed, to living the way cats do, and the way my two cats do, which is, you know, they just sleep.
Yeah, they're living the dream.
They're living the dream, no question. So they're great stories. I mean, so something special has got to be going on there, right? And they're different, obviously very different than dogs, but it's a good story.
The reason you know so much about this is, I would say, twofold. One, your background is in animal advocacy, that you are an attorney by training, mm-hmm. and that has led you beyond the work you do advocating for dogs and cats and animals and mm-hmm. helping organizations lobby for animal-related issues. But you have written this wonderful book, Pet Nation, The Love Affair That Changed America. So what you've given us so far is kind of the thumbnail of...
Right, the book.
That book.
Right.
But there's just so much more in this book that any animal lover or student of cultural history will find fascinating.
I hope so. That was the reason I wrote it.
I was just going to ask, what prompted you to share all of this?
Yeah, so my background, I bumped into my profession like a lot of people do. I was a lawyer lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and I got a call from the founder of Banfield Pet Hospitals, which is still the largest veterinary hospital group in the world with 1,100 hospitals. And they were part of a big coalition of the animal world, pharmaceuticals, food companies, nonprofits, American Humane Association, mm-hmm. HSUS, and others, that were trying to change the practice of microchipping so that pets could be found if they're lost through a microchip rather than a collar that might be chewed off or broken. So I got the problem solved in Congress in a way that surprised people, and my phone began to ring from members of the coalition, but Banfield then said, you can handle everything for us, touching all the state governments that we deal with, regulating veterinarians and pets and everything. And I thought I was done. I was like, this is fun, and,
Move on to the next client.
And the founder of Banfield, Scott Campbell, said, Mark, I think you can build a practice here. And I was like, what practice are you talking about? And then I began to get phone calls. And so I've spent the last 15 years involved on behalf mainly of companies, to be fair to your audience. I don't do a lot of work for nonprofits. It's been my job, if mm-hmm. you will. I do work with nonprofits, and I do work with a lot of veterinary colleges.
But to do that, something's got to pay the bills.
Yes, and I to be blunt, I learned...
You have cats to feed.
There you go. I got dogs to feed. I got a crazy dog, Louis the Papillon. So I learned a hell of a lot about pets. And most of my work has been trying to push for change or stop something bad from happening. So I had the good fortune of being paid to think about and to look at. But I didn't conceive of the book. The book came to me from an agent who said, publishers are interested in this idea of what happened with America Pets. Someone's got to tell the story from the inside. And I've been thinking about it a lot for 5 or 6 years or 7 years. And it occurred to me that what had occurred was transformational. This was a wholesale change. This wasn't people going from liking the color blue to liking the color red. This changed how we do things, where we do things, what we let a whole new species do, or existing species in its new role as cats and dogs and other pets have assumed. And I thought, that's a story worth telling. So I spent the summer of 2018 thinking through the book and outlining it, and my agent took it to a publisher, Penguin Random House, which was happy that they said, yeah, this is the book you want to write. And my brother came up with the name Pet Nation, and it was great. He just thought, I think you got to call Pet Nation. And you think about Pet Nation the way you'd say Chiefs Nation mm-hmm. or a Jayhawk Nation here. It's if two Kansas basketball fans, I won't say football because they're not quite where they want to be yet.
Yeah.
Les Miles might get them there, but we'll see. But two sports fans meet of the same team wearing a ball cap or a jersey or mm-hmm. or something that lets me know that you're a Jayhawks fan and I'm a Jayhawks fan for you. And they don't talk about how much money they make, where they live, what kind of car they drive. They don't talk about anything. They talk about last week's game. They talk about the linebackers. They don't have good mm-hmm. enough linebackers, or the ref screwed them on a call or something. And pets are like that. When dog owners meet strangers that would never talk to each other in Manhattan that might have millions of dollars a year difference in what they make and how they live, mm-hmm. doesn't matter. They just talk about, what's her name? What kind of breed is she? What's she like to eat? Do you come here often? And that's the magic of pets.
I've had many interactions yeah. where we've had a long conversation mm-hmm. and walk away from it okay. with the name of the pet, but you could threaten me with a hot poker and I couldn't tell you the name of the human.
Oh, all the time. All the time that happens. And that's what's cool. And one of the things I learned in my work was what I call the social capital of pets. Studies have been done now in four cities, Perth, Australia, San Diego, Portland, Oregon, Nashville. The number one factor that makes communities work and neighborhoods work, people trust each other more, fear less, lower crime, all the things you care about, is the presence of pets. It's not a church. It's not a school, believe it or not. It's not a company. It's not an organization. It's just the simple presence of pets creates an atmosphere and an awareness and a getting to know each other and a trust level that's more powerful than anything else. So as a country, you know, I'll leave your listeners with this thought. I want to see us double the number of pets in America. I think I don't want to require everybody to have a cat or a dog or a pet, but I want any barrier to stopping somebody from having one, financial or otherwise, removed.
And how could that not make this a better country?
That's my view. And you know what? Cheapest medicine there is. So Pet Nation, get my book.
There's so much more we want to talk about.
Let's do this again.
But let's do this again.
Yeah.
And while the listeners are waiting for us to do that again, read the book, because we're not placing a time limit on how long it takes you to get through the book. You'll probably get through it in one or two sittings. There'll be a link in the description for this episode for you to order the book. There'll be a link to Mark's website and to his social media with Facebook and Instagram. We'll have all of that in the description. And Mark, thank you so much for writing the book, and thank you for taking time to share this with our listeners today.
A lot of fun. We'll do it again. Thanks.
Thank you to Mark Cushing for joining us today. Links to his book, website, and social media are in this episode's description. We also include links to the book I mentioned by Roberto Verganti, Design-Driven Innovation, Changing the Rules of Competition by Radically Innovating What Things Mean, and the car commercials featuring dogs, in case you haven't seen them enough. You probably haven't. Again, Pet Tech CPR sessions to benefit Rosie Fund are scheduled for Saturday, October 17th at Bar K Dog Bar. Go to rosiefund.org/events or click on the link in the episode description for more information or to register. Make a difference in a shelter dog's life by purchasing one of our We Save Each Other t-shirts at bonfire.com. The link is in this episode's description. All proceeds go towards supporting Rosie Fund's mission to help senior and harder-to-adopt dogs have a better life. A big thank you to Alternative String Duo The Wires, featuring cellist Sasha Groshong and violinist Laurel Morgan Parks, for playing the wonderful music you've heard on today's and previous episodes of Dog Words. Learn about The Wires at thewires.info and download their music on iTunes. Also, check out fiddlelife.com and learn to play fiddle and cello fiddle online from Laurel and Sasha, even if you've never played before. As always, please download, subscribe, rate, and share Dog Words. This helps us with sponsorships, then Rosie Fund can help more dogs. Send us your comments, questions, and suggestions at rosiefund.org, and let us know if you would like to be a sponsor of the Dog Words podcast. Thank you for listening, and remember, we save each other.